Section 3, Life in Trustee, Georgia. As you read, look for the positive events of the trustee period, the end of the trustee period, terms, artisan. Throughout the trustee period, Georgians spent most of their time working to meet their basic needs, building homes, clearing land, planting and tending their crops, and providing the food and clothing to survive each day was their focus. The trustees continued to try to govern the colony from Great Britain, although they did not really understand what actual living in the colony was like. They did appoint men in Georgia to report to them and carry out their instructions, but they never allowed much government representation for their colonists. In spite of trustee plans and rules, the economy did not develop as they had hoped, although some areas did experience economic growth. Because of the focus on daily necessities, institutions such as education and religion usually took a back seat. Government and the economy. Because Oglethorpe was so busy, he seldom wrote reports to Great Britain. In 1737, the trust hired William Stevens as a secretary to write them about the colony's problems and its progress. With Oglethorpe focusing on forts and defense in the south, Stevens became the link between the colonists and the trustees who governed them. In 1741, the trust divided Georgia into a northern province, overseen by Stevens, and a southern province, overseen by Oglethorpe. When Oglethorpe left in 1743, the trustees appointed Stevens president of the entire colony. He governed with the help of a board of assistants, the first Georgians to have any input. While they acted as the agents for the trust in the colony, they did not have the power to make laws. The trustees never allowed elected representation of the colonists. During the War of Jenkins' Ear, Savannah struggled economically, and many settlers left for South Carolina. After the war, some began to return. To try to keep current settlers and attract more, Stevens encouraged the trustees to relax their rules, which they finally did by the late 1740s. Restrictions on land ownership came to an end, so large plantations began to appear. In 1750, they began to allow slavery in Georgia, although the rules for slaves were more lenient than they would be later. In the next year, hundreds of slaves were brought in, many by South Carolina planters who got land in Georgia. Before long, the islands, coast, and rivers near the coast had thousands of acres devoted to the cultivation of rice. There were other aspects to Georgia's economy besides the rice culture. In the Augusta area, a thriving trade with the Indians for deerskins and beaver furs had already been firmly established. Many small farmers throughout the colony continued to grow food crops and raise animals. Georgia's pine trees and the sap they produced also became important trade products. Conducting trade became an important occupation, and merchants and storekeepers began to set up businesses, as did artisans, skilled craftsmen, who made goods needed by the colonists. Education and religion. Most Georgians were concerned about survival. What education their children received was at home and covered practical matters. Boys learned how to plant and harvest crops. Girls learned how to cook and sew. The founding of schools was just not a major focus for most Georgians. There were some schoolmasters who took students for a fee. The most successful attempts at formal education were in the New Ebenezer community. There, the Salzburgers had teachers for their children. In 1740, Anglican minister George Whitefield, a follower of the Wesleys and Methodism, founded the Bethesda Orphanage and School. Bethesda means House of Mercy. Whitefield became famous, preaching throughout the American colonies and in England to raise money for his orphanage. These were the two most significant educational institutions in trustee Georgia. Organized religion also had a difficult time. the Presbyterian Scots in the southern part of the colony only had a minister for a short period. Early Church of England ministers sent to Georgia had to hold worship services in public buildings. In 1745, the new Anglican minister in Savannah, Bartholomew Zauberbühler, was determined to have a church building. He was finally successful when the Anglicans dedicated Christ Church in July 1750, near the end of the trustee period. That was the same year that Augustine's requested that a minister be sent to their area. The most successful colonists in organizing religious services were the Salzburgers. The Reverend John Martin Bolsius was the dedicated leader of all aspects of life in New Ebenezer. For the colonists who lived away from the towns, organized religion was mostly unavailable. The end of the trustee period. By the late 1740s, many of the trustees were disillusioned. Their early vision of the colony had failed. The cultivation of olives and grapes had not been successful. Silk culture was a major disappointment. The trustees had given in to demands for changes on the land policies, on the sale and use of rum, and on slavery. Maintaining enthusiasm on the trustee board became increasingly difficult. Sometimes they did not even have enough people at their meetings to conduct business. When Parliament did not vote them any money in 1751, they decided to turn the colony over to the British government in 1752, a year earlier than required. And so Georgia became a royal colony. Even though Georgia did not become the colony the trustees had envisioned, it did have accomplishments. Georgia had successfully defended itself and South Carolina from Spain. Augusta had become an important center of trade with the Indians, a business that would continue to prosper until the disruption of the American Revolution. The colonists had cleared lands for planting and built homes and public buildings, although most were very basic. They had learned to survive in this new environment. By the time the first royal governor appointed by the king arrived, Georgia had started on the path to growth and prosperity. Reviewing the section. 1. Define artisan. 2. When did the trustees return Georgia to the king? 3. What effect did changing land policies have on the colony? Page 211, Georgia Portraits, William Stevens. One of the ways that we can learn about our past is by studying the documents that those living in the past created, which are known as primary sources. Some of the most important primary sources for studying colonial Georgia are those from William Stevens, including the journal in which he recorded events and observations. In the title of her recent book about him, historian Julie Ann Sweet called Stevens the forgotten founder of Georgia. In many ways, Stevens kept the Georgia colony going through some of its hard times. He was, according to Professor Sweet, a man of duty. In 1737, when he was 66 years old, William Stevens agreed to come to Georgia to work as the secretary for the trustees. The trustees wanted someone who would send them regular reports about the colony, something Oglethorpe failed to do. Stevens, because of some economic problems, needed a job. Leaving behind his wife and 8 of his 9 children, Stevens left England for Georgia in the fall of 1737. His adult son Thomas came with him, as did several indentured servants who were to work on the land Stevens received from the trust. Thomas worked hard to make this plantation, called Bewley, a success, while William Stevens worked hard to report accurately to the trustees about the conditions and people in the colony. His letters and journal tell us much about the life in this period. Stevens' arrival was at the time of growing discontent with trustee policies. Stevens particularly disapproved of the malcontents. As an employee of the trustees, Stevens believed it was his responsibility to uphold the trust policy. Stevens was very upset when his son Thomas went back to England and began to write defenses of the malcontents. When Stevens arrived in Georgia, he did not have any power to make decisions. This changed in 1740 when the trustees gave him oversight of the finances. In 1741, the trustees divided the colony into two counties, putting Stevens in charge of Savannah and Oglethorpe in charge of Frederica. When Oglethorpe left Georgia for good in 1743, Stevens became the president of the entire colony, a position he held until 1751. Even then, he did not have much executive power. Throughout his service, he was loyal to the trustees, trying to carry out their policies. He also oversaw the colony when the trust began to change many of its rules. His efforts helped the colony survive, and his writings help us understand life in early Georgia. Page 212, Chapter Review. Chapter Summary, Section 1, Georgia's Founding. James Edward Oglethorpe and 20 associates received a grant from British King George II to establish a colony south of the Savannah River. Oglethorpe offered three reasons for founding the colony. 1. Charitable. The new colony would be home to deserving poor. 2. Military defense. The new colony would be a buffer between South Carolina and Spanish Florida. And 3. Economic. The new colony would grow plants England was then buying from other countries. Under the economic policy of mercantilism, a colony existed to help its mother country gain a favorable balance of trade. The Charter of 1732 set up the rules under which the colony would work. Those receiving the colony were called trustees. James Oglethorpe led the first colonists to Georgia on the ship Anne. Tomochichi, the leader of the Yamacraw people, agreed to give the settlers the land along the coast a few miles inland between the Savannah and Altamaha rivers. John and Mary Musgrove served as interpreters for the colony. The colonists chose Yamacraw Bluff for their first settlement, Savannah. William Bull helped lay out the streets and squares of Savannah. Each household received a lot on a square, a garden lot, and a farm lot. Oglethorpe also established several forts as protection for the settlers. Section 2. Changes and Challenges. New laws approved by Great Britain in 1736 outlawed the sale and use of rum, required Indian traders to be licensed, and made slavery illegal in the colony. New settlers to the Georgia colony included the Jews, the Salzburgers, the Moravians, and the Highland Scots. The Salzburgers were the most successful farmers. The Moravians were pacifist, which caused tensions with other settlers. The Moravians had all left the colony by 1740. The Highland Scots settled the town of Darien and helped defend the colony. A number of colonists, called malcontents, were unhappy with the trustees' policies. A number of the malcontents left Georgia to settle in South Carolina. Oglethorpe oversaw the construction of a number of forts in the colony, including Forts Frederica and Augusta. In 1739, the War of Jenkins' Ear between Great Britain and Spain broke out. Georgia suffered from fighting with the Spanish in Florida. Oglethorpe led an unsuccessful invasion of Florida in 1740. When the Spanish tried to take Fort Frederica, Georgia's forces were able to defeat them in the Battle of Bloody Marsh. Section 3. Life in Trustee Georgia. William Stevens was hired as secretary for the colony. He eventually was named president of the colony. After the War of Jenkins' Ear, many of the trustees' original rules and regulations were changed. Restrictions on land ownership ended, and slavery was permitted. Rice plantations soon appeared. Reverend George Whitefield established the Bethesda Orphanage and School. Although the original ideals for the colony were never fulfilled, Georgia made progress and survived. The trustees decided to return the Georgia colony to the king in 1752. Georgia thus became a royal colony. Page 213 contains a review of Chapter 9.